Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to this. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I'm JB here in the studio with Phil. Hello, Philip.
Hello, JB.
And down the line, all the way in Yorkshire, cottaging, apparently, it's Tim Cocker. Hello, Tim.
The phrase cottaging is an interesting one.
Well, you're in a cottage, aren't you?
This is true. In
Yorkshire,
in the Yorkshire Dales, it's wonderful. This sheep.
I didn't have you down as a cottager.
Well, you know, don't knock it till you tried it, JB.
Well, quite. I guess with all the websites available now to do these things, it's much easier than it used to be.
Well, apps.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. Good old Airbnb. So, how are you both anyway?
Very good, thanks. How are you?
I'm okay. A bit of a traumatic weekend for rugby, I'd say. Well, at least from my point of view.
Interesting.
The big result, we'll talk about it in very great detail later. Benetton beat Dragons. Tim, you were so dismissive of Benetton. I hope you want to take that back now.
Yeah, they snuck a really good win, didn't they?
Snuck? Last week it was the Scarlets, this week it is the Dragons, next week the World.
That is a record 5 on the bounce, or 5 consecutive wins for Benetton.
Yeah, they're killing it.
That is, frankly, astonishing.
Not only is it astonishing, I mean, if you think about like the Welsh teams and the Irish teams whinging that they lose their players, well, at least they are traditional rugby-playing nations with loads of depth compared to the Italians.
Yeah.
Now, the Italians, when their players go, Who steps in? Like, the milkman or... Like,
the chef.
The chef, yeah.
The physio.
Who is playing these games? But no, they did really, really well.
Yeah, very good.
The yin to that yang is all of JB's former club loves. Once it was Exeter Chiefs, then it was Bath, or it was Bath and then Exeter, and then his latterly beloved Sale Sharks all... And, got defeated.
And what does that tell you, Tim? It tells you, I love rugby. I'm not a one-club man. I love all of rugby.
You are now a one-club man in Benetton.
Yes, absolutely. Well, that and my beloved Jaguares. Good news about them, by the way.
Well, they did lose.
No, they won.
Jaguares?
Yeah, they won. Well, I mean, when I say they won, they did exactly as they intended to do, which is score a scrum penalty try.
Yeah,
make loads of yards, throw loads of offloads, and narrowly lose gallantly.
They played pretty well.
They did, didn't they?
One stage, I watched the last 20 minutes, and they looked like they were going to win it.
Yeah.
They had...
I'm certain that they were.
Yeah, I was. That was quite a good game.
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed that. In fact, there's been loads of good games this weekend. Not necessarily high scoring, but good games.
Can I just tease ahead to a couple of things that are going to be coming up?
Yes,
make
please.
Make sure you listen to this whole podcast, because we are rugby wizards, as it turns out.
We are?
And as I'll reveal why in a little bit, I also have a Rugby World Cup qualifying inspired teaser.
Wow.
In a little bit. And in addition to that, our world changed with the discovery. Well, I've got to thank Cammy Black on Twitter, who drew my attention to this. But rugby fan fiction is a thing, and I'm going to share a little excerpt.
Rugby fan fiction. I am very interested to see where this is going.
I'm intrigued and a little bit nervous about where this is going.
Yes, it's well worth listening to. So we'll get into that in a little bit. Let's just run around some of the sort of headlines from the rugby week. I suppose one of the big ones particularly if you're an Irish fan, is the, well, Henshaw out for the rest of the season, Tadhg Furlong out for the rest of the Six Nations.
Ooh. Yeah, that's a tough break for them. But, hey, they've got strength and depth, good programmes. They'll be okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think they're two players you can't replace.
I think you can replace Henshaw. I'm just not sure who with. But
well, you could replace him with Ringrose.
Oh, hang on. No, you can't.
Yeah.
They've got Bundiaki there. Look, they'll work something out. They're very, very deep. They've got good squad. They'll be fine.
I think that makes it significantly advantage England. If it gets to a showdown on the last day.
Is Tadhg Furlong definitely out? Because a week ago it was kind of, he might be touch and go.
Yeah, I think he's not definitely out, but he's not. He's got a big question mark next to his name. So
yeah, whereas Henshaw is definitely out, isn't he?
Definitely out.
100%. What's his injury? Do you know?
Shoulder.
Henshaw was shoulder, yeah.
Three to bad. 4 months. Elsewhere, there was Jerome Kano going to Toulouse, which
yes.
forms part of a bigger narrative, Phil.
It does. It forms part... Well, this is kind of a tease because into a bigger narrative. So Jerome Kano is going... he's 35 now, I think. He's still a hell of a player, but his star seems to be waning on the international stage.
Mm.
But... Probably the bigger story is that New Zealand, well, the All Blacks, New Zealand rugby, after losing some high profile players in the last few years, thinking Piatau, Sopawanga, Luatua, and a few others, Brad Shields being one.
Cruden,
yeah. After losing those players who were all in their prime to European clubs, they're talking about setting up kind of relationships with pre-vetted European clubs who meet certain criteria.
This is genius.
For standards of coaching, for quality of training facilities, performance facilities, physios, that kind of thing, to allow some of their players to have 1 or 2 years mid-World Cup cycle in Europe to get some serious cash where they know they're going to be looked after well and then come back.
Do you
back.
Know why this is so clever?
From an All Blacks point of view, very, very clever.
No, do you know why it's even more clever than you even think it is?
well, that assumes you think you know why I think it's clever.
Okay. Well, I think, but, you'll, yeah, I think you and I will be on the same page here. But I'm thinking that... Do you know the way you pay for your RICS membership?
Yes, I do.
Right, to be an accredited whatever it is part of this body.
Yeah.
It would not surprise me one bit if, to get your club inspected, you need to pay a New Zealand rugby union official a handsome amount of money to maintain your licence. That's what I would do.
Probably. And people will pay it.
Yeah.
Because it gets you access to the best players.
Outside the salary cap.
And arguably... well, only outside the salary cap if they're marquee players.
No, what I mean by outside the salary cap is it's a way to spend money to improve your team outside of the salary cap.
Yes. And also, so you would have to pay... I was trying to think of this in my head the other day. You'd have to pay less than market rate for those players.
Yeah.
Because if they're going to go to a non-accredited club, then they lose the right to play in the next World Cup.
Yes.
Which is a massive... It's much bigger than a financial incentive.
Mm.
So their market rate, let's say 800 grand for Cruden, he loses the opportunity to play in the next World Cup.
Yep.
Saracens, if they were accredited, might get him for 600 grand because he can go back
it
to New Zealand.
It does raise other questions, doesn't it? Like, are they going to expand their pool of players to such... I mean, so imagine that your three best fly halves go somewhere else.
Yeah, Cruden, Sopawanga, and let's say, well, Bowden.
And then three more fly halves emerge in your regional teams.
Ihaya West, Jordy Barrett, and Richie Mwanga.
Whoever it is, right?
Yeah.
Like, when they come back, does that cause massive disruption? And don't those guys then get kicked out? Or, you know, this is going to be so... It's going to be weird to send all those players away to get them all back, depending on how many they do it with.
What an awesome problem to have. Do you know what? I think this will be used? This will be used like the reverse of the way Ireland cherry-pick certain positions that work for their national team. New Zealand will sort of say, we've got a really good young whatever, number eight, who could do with more game time. Kieran Reid, we know, go make some coin. And you tactically select the positions or the players or to actually create that production line even more so.
Could it backfire?
Yeah. It could do, but I mean, having more strength in depth and more options in every position is a real...
When I say backfire, how about this? How about the officials with their little black ties come over in their black suits, the New Zealand rugby union officials, and they meet someone, I'm going to say, in a club like, loads of money, Toulon. And Toulon go, what do we need in order to get your players over here? And they go, right, well, you need this
discipline,
coaching structure.
Conditioning,
diet. All that stuff. And then before you know it, Toulon are basically copying the New Zealand model, and New Zealand have given them all the information to do so.
It's not going to be like that. It's not going to be like that. Think about it. The clubs that you would think that they would want to work with now would be Leinster and Munster.
But that's the whole point, isn't it? The whole point is a club...
Possibly Glasgow, Saracens, Exeter, Wasps. There you go.
Leicester?
There's the teams that they'd want to work with.
Sale?
Maybe Leicester. Who knows?
Not Leicester.
What the criteria are. But they're not going to give away They're not going to give away the crown jewels whilst also letting their players go and getting coin.
But the players are the crown jewels.
Yeah, but exactly. But this is a way of...
They're giving away all their
having
knowledge.
Having access to Aaron Cruden at the World Cup.
Yeah, but they're giving away all their knowledge. I mean, think about it. If a fly half goes somewhere and it goes to an accredited club... And the accredited club has matched all the New Zealand standards because New Zealand have given them the standards.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean they're saying you must play this way and coach in this
way. No, but they have given away all the state secrets.
Yeah, I'm not sure about all the state secrets. I mean,
Is that fly half not going to tell Sale Sharks or Exeter?
But what is he not going to tell them that they can't get from just watching Bowden Barrett play every single week? Yeah. If you have two analysts, just get every single game tape of Bowden Barrett playing.
But they don't, do they? They have two analysts looking at their next Premiership opponent.
Yeah, but
it's one thing to know what the team's going to do. It's another thing to stop it. Everyone knows the way New Zealand play, the way England play, the way South Africa play, Scotland, Wales, whatever.
Everyone knows that New Zealand have a 75% return on their own kickoffs. That doesn't mean they can stop it from happening.
No, but it doesn't mean they could replicate it.
They can try and replicate it.
Yeah. Well, exactly.
But everyone's...
And if you've got New Zealand's top lock in your squad, there's a good chance you can replicate it.
Yeah, but that doesn't harm... If Toulon can reclaim their own kickoffs, that doesn't harm New Zealand, does it?
Well, it would on a more overall stage, on a more macro stage, as everyone starts to catch up with them on their national setups and everything else.
But everyone knows that already.
By that standard, France would be the greatest team on earth because they're like 50% awesome foreign players.
That is true.
Yeah. It's interesting though. It's definitely one to watch. And I think you're right, Phil. The interesting part will be like, will some clubs be going, what? Why can't we have those players and some other cherry-picked clubs get access? That will be when it gets interesting.
It's going to be exactly like the Sam Burgess situation. When the RFU tried to bring him back and pay his salary to put him to Bath, and all of the other Premiership clubs said, hang on a minute, you cannot, there's no possible way you can do this.
Exactly. It's interesting. Will other clubs then make the effort to improve all their systems and processes in order to get this accreditation?
Well, yes.
I would.
Absolutely. They would spend whatever... The point you made, which is excellent, is... It's outside the salary cap.
Yeah.
So you spend to get the best physio, the best strength and conditioning, which, to be fair, I imagine most of the English clubs, if they weren't
this is my point, isn't it? They think they do, and then the New Zealand guy comes over, no, you need to do it like this, or you're not having our players.
If they're not there already, they wouldn't be too far off without a few minor tweaks. So it'd be very interesting to see if that does gain traction.
Mm. It will. Elsewhere, Eddie Jones has named 29 men for the Calcutta Cup match.
Yeah.
Any surprises? I don't think so.
Harry Mallinder.
It's 29, though, isn't it? So.
Yeah, but still.
Four are going to get...
Nathan Earle and Harry Mallinder.
Nathan.
Both in that they're both in the best 29 players.
Now tell me this,
England
Tim.
Have available to them.
And Gabriel Ibitoya.
Did you watch any of the...
He's an academy guy, so in the top 28... Without an asterisk next to their name, Harry Mallinder and Nathan Earle are both in the top 28 players.
Nathan Earle is an incredible shout. Tell me this, did you watch any of the Under-20s World Cup by any chance, Tim?
The most recent one?
Yeah.
In Georgia?
No, the one in...
Only bits and bobs.
The other one, sorry, in Manchester. Did you see any of that?
I did.
Now, I was interested to know, when you watched Harry Mallander then, you would have thought eventually he would become an England international, though.
Oh, he was absolutely outstanding, and he played 12, 10 and 15 in that tournament.
Because I just see it as a natural progression, really. I think he's always been earmarked for these things, and he is a pretty good player. His defence is a little bit ropey, but his all-round skills are pretty high-end. And he's 6 foot four.
That's a very Eddie Jones progression, it seems. He seems to like picking players from under 20 straight into the national team and ignoring players aged 24 to 29.
He does enjoy that. And I'll give you an example of someone who I've interviewed, as it happens, who is a good example of this. I'm sure he gave an international appearance to Matt Gitto before he had a club appearance, and it was against England.
Back in about 2001, something like that.
So, like, he has got a track record for it, and it just makes me think Marcus Smith is probably more likely to play for England than we realise.
Ah, that's where you're going with this.
Well, or Harry Mallander, or any of these young lads, because he does have a track record of doing it.
He does, yeah.
We'll see.
I'm not appalled by Harry Mallander.
No,
appalled would be strong, but it's not merited on performances.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think he's an exceptionally talented player.
Yeah, I do as
and
well.
I think he's got a very big future. You're right that his and Northampton's form this year has been pretty.
Do you think Harry
rugby.
Mallander though would be picked if he was playing for instance, Exeter or
depends
Saracens?
If he learns to tackle or not.
If he was playing, yeah. If he was playing, so I don't think just playing for those clubs would do it, but if he was in a winning side and he's playing very well and getting front football and he's making breaks and setting up tries, then that's a big boost. When he's behind a pack that's going backwards and a team that's losing and missing tackles left, right and centre,
not sure.
It doesn't help.
The one thing I think about him, the kind of knock on him, is I don't think he's a fullback. Like, I think of fullbacks like Halfpenny and Mike Brown, who are super solid in the air. They've got that kind of nuggety kind of aggression going on, and I don't see that in Mallander. Can you see him going up to claim high balls against Mike Brown and winning?
No.
Or Israel Folau?
No.
I think...
But then there are other types of fullbacks. The great Serge Blanco for France, Christian Cullen for New Zealand.
Yeah, but we're talking a long time ago. Who in the modern age would you compare him to?
Stuart Hogg's not that safe as houses. He's the attacking weapon, isn't he?
Much faster, but yeah, okay, that's a fair one.
Yeah,
because everyone else is pretty good in the air, and I'm not saying he's not good in the air. I'm just saying I've not seen it.
Yeah. Well, it's probably an irrelevant conversation in the sense that he's not going to feature in the Calcutta Cup match.
It's very unlikely. Yes,
highly, highly unlikely.
Yes.
What other news has there been in the rugby world? Not a great deal, really, is there? I don't think. Outside of actual games.
One thing that it happened a couple of weeks ago now, but we didn't actually mention it at the time, was South Africa changing coaches.
Yes.
Yeah, that happened. I don't know what it means, though. I don't know who this new guy is.
Well, here's what I think will probably happen. South Africa are going to relax their rules on selecting players not in South Africa. Argentina will do the same, and they're both going to have resurgent 18 months building up to a World Cup as a result.
Yeah, it'd be very hard. I mean, you'd have to be completely incompetent to ruin South Africa any more than it already is. So the upwards trajectory, you'd imagine, is going to be fairly substantial.
Yeah, you'd hope so.
And actually, as we're just going through miscellaneous things, can I bring your attention to a young man called Taj, or however you say his name?
Ty
McElroy.
Ty McElroy.
Do you know who Ty McElroy is, Tim?
Yeah, I saw this story. Yeah.
Isn't it amazing? Shall I just delve into it a little bit further?
Go on.
So this lad, he's a hooker. He's in the Ireland under-20 squad, and from what I can tell, he gets released from Leinster. So he's on his way to the World Cup, the under-20s World Cup, when an IRFU official waves a bit of paper in front of him saying, sign this right now to sign for Connacht, or you will not be getting on that plane. Rightly, he phoned his agent, as you should, for a major financial decision.
A long-term decision.
Yeah, a long-term financial decision. The agent rightly says, do not sign that piece of paper, because who knows what's on it. And they left him at the airport. This is an absolute disgrace.
Now, just stop a second. Before you go any further, you are making quite a few assumptions, the main one being that the way that this guy has said it happened is exactly how it happened.
Well, do you have any evidence it didn't?
Do you have any evidence it did?
Yeah, I've got his word. I'm reading the story.
Okay, well,
I mean, that's a first-hand account. So unless you've got another account which you know is directly opposite that, I'm happy to hear it. But this is from the 42, which is a pretty good sports website.
Well, no, it's not from. It's not about the website. That they've asked one guy what happened. He's given a version. It appears that 1 week after he was released from the Ireland World Cup under 20 squad, he signed for Saracens, and the reason they put the contract in front of him is they said, we've heard you're signing for Saracens.
But do you not think, out of principle, that using the leverage of a World Cup to a young lad in an airport is disgraceful? If that's how it happened, if they said to him
if that's how it happened.
Yeah, which is exactly what this lad says.
Exactly, if it happened exactly the way the guy is describing,
even the week before, because what they've done effectively is they've said to this young lad, he can't go back to the under 20s World Cup. That is done for him now. So do you know when you talk, Tim, about the passion of the shirt and all this? Well, this is all the things that a young lad going to the under 20s World Cup would have been looking forward to. Only for the IRFU to pull that sort of stunt, and I think it's absolutely abhorrent. And I think we're going to see more of this, unfortunately, with the 5-year residency rule and all the rest of it. The battle for signatures is just going to get younger and younger and younger. And, you know, if this is true, I think it's
anything to do with residency. I don't think it's not that people are trying to get a youngster for England. We're not trying to get
if you want to get a youngster, you've got to sign them up early. And the battle to keep people in academies and all that sort of stuff. We've got to be careful it doesn't turn into grisly business, and that would be my point.
Yeah, that's fair. I think Saracens just wanted a hooker and identified him as a hooker they'd quite like to have. I don't think it's got anything to do with national selection in this particular case.
Well, it has, because they didn't let him play for Ireland.
Well, no, it hasn't got to do with... That's not the reason he's been put into the Saracens Academy.
No, of course not. But the point really isn't that, is it? It's the absolute abhorrent behaviour of using leverage of a World Cup in an airport to get someone to sign a long-term financial commitment. Imagine if credit card companies operated like that. It's unbelievable.
If that's how it happened, then yeah, it is.
All right. Okay, it didn't happen. Okay, fine.
Well, no, I'm agreeing with you. Yeah.
Yeah, if that is how it happened, because we do only have one side of the story here.
Yeah, true.
As in, we've got... And from what I've read, there's no reason I have to believe it didn't happen like that, but we have only got his word. And do you know why he got released by Leinster?
They liked someone else.
Really?
Yeah, someone else filled that spot.
Mm. And the other thing, which sort of, I mean, this shouldn't affect whether he plays for Ireland at whatever level. That's the broader point. But the other element of this, which I think is much in your line of thinking, is no player should be restricted from earning what they can earn. And I imagine the Saracens would have had a much more lucrative offer on the table than he would have got at Connacht. So it shouldn't mix up with, you know, he'd earned the right to go on that under-20s World Cup. And he wanted to make a move to England. But if that was... You can understand why Ireland would be upset about that, but I don't think that was the right thing to do. But yeah, it will be interesting to see how this sort of thing plays out in future.
I think we're going to see so much more of this.
I almost think this is short-sighted from Ireland's point of view. Yeah. If he can go and play 2 or 3 years for Saracens, one of the best teams, if not the best team in the world over the past few years... And then come back and be a better player for Ireland.
Yeah, look at Tadhg Byrne.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Great example. And also, do you know what? If I was his agent or if I was his family, I don't think I'd want him to play for Ireland. It's such a shoddy way to behave. And if that's how they're treating their lads, it's poor.
Yeah, it might well be that is a couple of individuals and that's not how the IRFU
I mean, the things that we do know is that he didn't get onto a flight and that he was at the airport. So something happened and that alone is shoddy. Whether he'd agreed to sign for Saracens, whether it's delayed, that alone is shoddy.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. That's the bit we don't know. What he's said is he had not made up his decision. It was completely in the balance, and it was only a week later he made up his mind to sign Saracens. It could be, we don't know. It could be, yes, he was definitely going to leave. He just didn't want to say so because he wanted to play in the under 20s World Cup, which I wouldn't begrudge him that.
Yeah, and even if he had already
signed... But those are the rules as well, aren't they?
Even if he had already signed for Saracens, if he's the best hooker or one of the top three, he should still be going to that World Cup.
Yeah. He's done his time at Leinster. If Leinster wanted to keep him, he probably would have stayed.
So. Well, let's talk about us as rugby magicians.
Why? What have we done?
Yeah.
Wherever we decide to go on our Tier 2 tour, win the Rugby Europe Championship.
Whoa, it's early days,
We could end up being 2 from 2.
I think, so, Georgia might have something to say about that.
Oh, no, this is true, of course. When I was looking at the table of World Cup qualification, Georgia aren't included because they're already there.
Yeah.
So Spain looked like they were top of the table. But Spain just had a humongous win this weekend, today, in fact, as we record this, against the Mighty Oaks.
So they've beaten Romania, they've beaten Germany, presumably they're going to lose to Georgia, presumably, but we don't know. If we knew, we wouldn't play the game. Oh, sorry, they've not played Germany.
They've not, they beat Belgium.
Russia.
They beat Russia in Russia, thanks to a disallowed try or a try that wasn't given.
So they've basically got to go through Germany, and they're at sixes and sevens at the moment.
And Belgium. Belgium away, Germany at home, and we're there for the Germany at home game.
I've got a funny feeling they might be doing all right.
That game could potentially be the game where they seal qualification for the World Cup, but at the very least get through to a playoff for the World Cup.
Yes. Yeah, it looks like their chance of getting through to a playoff at least is pretty good.
Can you explain the process now? Can anyone explain it?
No.
So,
I can't believe you're even trying, Phil.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's definitely the man for the job, though, isn't he?
Well,
this is true.
I'll tell you the best thing to do. Go to World Rugby's Twitter account, and there is a very good one-minute video that explains qualification from...
I think I could do it.
...from Europe. Okay, you attempt.
I think.
And I'll try and correct you if you go wrong.
So, as I understand it, Georgia have qualified because they were third in their group from the last World Cup.
Yeah,
so
correct.
That means that the best of Europe will then go through the remaining. Okay, so that could be Romania, that could be Spain. We're not sure, but if Spain
that's averaged over 2 years, though, apparently.
Yes. So if it's not Spain, then Spain go into a playoff with another European team, probably Portugal.
Well, I think it's definitely Portugal.
Is it?
It is.
But I couldn't quite work out why it's Portugal.
Well, this is exactly right. So there's a single box saying Portugal. Yeah. Where do they come from?
So they're not even in the top level of the Rugby European Championship 2018.
Unless we just don't know about it.
What?
Well, no, we're so invested in...
If it's a playoff for the World Cup, Spain v Portugal, I think we need to go back to Madrid for that game.
Or Lisbon.
Yeah. Because it would be certainly, because if they beat Portugal, if they beat Portugal, they go and play a home and away fixture against Samoa.
That's right. Yes, they do, which is great fun. And if they lose that, they go into the 4-team repechage against Canada and somebody else
and two others. Yeah.
Oh, good goodness me. Well, I suppose the bottom line is we're going on our Tier 2 tour for the Germany game, which could be a historic day for Spain, and We're gonna be there. 15,000 people were there against Romania this weekend, so the atmosphere is going to be incredible.
So last time we went, I kind of in my mind I was talking up the game to get excited about it, and we got there. It was a good game. You know, it was 5,000 people there, decent atmosphere. I think this is going to be in orders of magnitude bigger. You know, I mean, what, 16,000 there this weekend?
Yeah, 15 plus thousand.
Now,
in Romania, there were kind of five, six, and the atmosphere wasn't amazing.
No, but...
It's good fun.
It was amazing fun. It was a brilliant event.
We've been to the stadium, and that place with 16,000 will be rocking. It's amazing.
Yeah, so that'll be incredible.
Yeah,
Bring it on.
They've only got to beat... Before they play that game, they've only got to beat Belgium, right? They've only got... That one game, because they've got a break, or do they have Georgia before that?
They've got Belgium away and then Germany at home.
So they have Georgia first. So they have Belgium away as the last game. In 2 weeks, so they have a rest weekend this weekend. In 2 weeks' time, they travel to Georgia, to Tbilisi.
Ooh.
And that could put the brakes on pretty...
Well, they might lose half their squad.
Quickly, yeah.
Yeah, they might have no front rows left or something horrendous. Just one more thing about the Tier 2. I've had a bit of a think about this because, was it last week? Yeah, it was last week, wasn't it? Georgia scrimmaged with England for a little while.
Yes.
And by all accounts, it's a very good session.
Yeah.
Now, there are five teams in the Championship National League Europe Cup, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Do you not think a good way to bridge the gap, and I never want to talk about promotion relegation again in Six Nations because it's a waste of time, but one of the ways to bridge the gap, do you not think everyone should have a training week with a top a tier one nation?
Yeah, why not?
I mean, that sounds like a win-win for everyone.
Yes. Yeah. I'd be very happy with that.
Hmm. I think that sounds good. I've got one little teaser then. So a little bit of general knowledge quiz. So what I've done is, because Spain could qualify for the World Cup in 2019, I've taken a look at the teams outside of the 11 regular countries. Hold on, have I got that right? England, Scotland, Wales, Ireland, France, Italy, New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, Tonga, Fiji, Samoa, Argentina. Outside of those nations, which teams have played at a World Cup? And I'm going to let you take it in turns to answer until one of you gets one wrong.
Okay.
And I'll say, what the heck, JB, go first.
So the 11, is Georgia in that?
Nope.
So just to be clear, the 11 is the Six Nations plus...
It's the Six Nations...
plus the four...
Rugby Championship, Tonga, Fiji, Samoa, yeah.
So 13.
Tonga. Pacific Nations, the Six Nations, and the Rugby Championship.
So that's 11, 12, 13, 14. Okay.
Yes.
It's 14, isn't it?
Six plus four plus three.
13.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, that one. Okay.
There are 11 others.
Ooh, okay.
All right. Do you want to go first?
Well, it's on you.
All right. So I will go with Georgia.
Correct. They first qualified in 07 and have been ever present ever since.
Was it 07 the first time they qualified? Yeah. Wow.
And then it'd be Ireland.
I'll go geographically close. Russia.
Russia... Have they been to a World Cup? They've been to one.
I was going to say, it's your quiz. I'll go Romania.
Correct. Romania have been ever present every single World Cup.
Ooh. I will go Portugal.
Portugal have been to one World Cup in 2007.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the home of freedom, USA.
Correct. They've been in every World Cup.
I'm going to follow you across to... Canada.
Home of PC nonsense.
Who, for the time being, have been in every World Cup.
The home of sweetheart Justin Trudeau.
Oh, yeah. What a guy.
What a man.
There are 6 nations left you haven't said.
We'll get them all. Uruguay.
Uruguay, correct. 1903, then had a bit of a break, back for 2015.
Working my way north, I'm going to go to Japan.
Japan have been to every World Cup.
Good lads.
I saw Japan versus Samoa when I was in school playing at Wrexham.
We watched Japan versus...
Oh, Russia.
It was Russia, yeah.
Yeah. Arias
Park.
Park, yeah. Arias, but never mind. I'll go with Namibia.
Namibia have been to 5 World Cups ever since 99.
How many are we missing now?
1, 2, 3 nations left.
Ooh.
It's a bit of a shootout. If one of you misses and the other one gets one.
I'm going to go for...
Uh-oh.
Zimbabwe.
Damn it! That was the one that I was going to go for.
It is correct. They were in the first 2 World Cups.
Hmm.
The first World Cup was invitational, and they invited the Soviet Union, who declined.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Ivory Coast.
Correct, JB. 1995. Their one and only appearance. They did all right as well. They pushed Tonga quite hard.
Hmm.
I think I know the last one as well.
There's one more.
Have we said...
Uh-oh.
Spain.
Huh.
1999, you've got the lot.
Hey, give ourselves a clap. Well done, us.
Well done. That's good work.
Very good.
Right, let's talk about some blooming rugby.
Yeah, rugby. Let's kick off with... do you know what? Let's go with Wasps and Exeter.
Yeah, it was a big game of the weekend, really, in as far as the Avicii's concerned.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a few big games, actually. I'd probably say that in terms of importance for their seasons, Leicester Harlequins was probably the biggest match of them all. But we'll keep our powder.
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? Because if it wasn't Leicester and Harlequins, I mean, if it was two teams traditionally in that position, for instance,
8th and 9th place,
yeah, Sale versus Gloucester,
yeah,
we just would not care.
Sale versus Gloucester with seven games to go in the season.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, because basically it's first place in the sack race.
Yeah. Yep. And Leicester now move within 1 point of top four.
Which is incredible, isn't it?
By winning that, yeah.
So, you know, for instance, if Sale would have won...
Sorry. I'm incorrect on that. They moved within one win of being top four.
So Sale would have been top four if they'd have won. Or they'd been fifth, maybe. I'm pretty sure they'd be fourth. Fourth because of points difference.
Bonus.
They level on points. If they got a bonus point win, they would have been.
Bonus point win, they would have been level on points for Gloucester.
But with their points difference, they'd be ahead. And their head-to-heads.
Although they've won fewer games.
Oh, I don't know which one it means.
Yeah, I don't know which one it goes.
But anyway, yeah, that's the point.
They'd be so right.
Do you know what, JB? I'm gonna offer you the floor where it comes to Wasps Exeter, because I'm gonna offer you the opportunity to rectify what you said before, because you have been incredibly critical of Wasps.
No, I haven't.
Saying phrases. Yes, you have.
No, I haven't.
Even to the point where people at Wasps said, why did you make JB like beating us down so much? And you said they're reliant on Danny Cipriani making things happen.
Correct.
They're reliant on individual brilliance.
Correct.
And you've said they're not well coached.
Correct.
You actually went as far as at one point saying there is no coaching.
Yeah, I still think that is a possibility. First and foremost, it was a fantastic display, and very, particularly in the second half, very unwaspsy. I mean, I was watching that game and I actually thought, in fact, I put a bet on Exeter to win as soon as they went 7-0 down, because I was so convinced that Exeter would. Not to take anything away from Wasps, there were a ton of Exeter errors, just things like unforced errors, and the way Exeter play, because they rely on an error-free game, once you start making errors, you can't play that rugby. And silly things like Woodburn getting up after he was told that he was down, or Armand knocking on the ball both at the base of a scrum and going for the line, just things which aren't very Exeter-ish.
That poor second row making his Premiership debut and just doing everything he did just went wrong.
Yeah, well, but on the other hand, Wasps weren't very waspy, particularly in the second half when Gopeth and Robertson, some of their tactical kicking was outstanding.
It was brilliant.
I haven't really seen much of Wasps doing that. Now, going back to the coaching, I do truly believe what I said. In the same way, do you remember a guy called Ben Ryan?
I've heard of him.
Remind me, I don't know.
Yeah, I think he might play. You've got a very good quote from Ben Ryan, which is like, thick playbooks, thick players. Lack of coaching isn't always necessarily a negative. I think it usually is. But it is a legitimate way to do things. As Ben Ryan will say, it's about, you know, letting your individual players play well. And that's what Wasps have done in the past. I don't think it's effective long-term as a system like Exeter's, but that is an opinion thing. So I stand by that wholeheartedly.
Can I bring your attention to what I mentioned last week and what I think you saw against Exeter as well? Their defence has been an issue this season. It has improved out of sight.
Again, I'm cautious on that. And the reason is, Wasps made a lot of good turnovers. What's the young lad? Is it Willis? Wills? What's his name?
Willis.
Willis and Young
were outstanding. And it did feel a little bit like Wasps' line would bend, and then someone would come up with a good steal. For instance, who did it? Gopeth nipped around the side of a ruck, picked up a ball. Willie LaRue did it. The turnovers by Young and Willis were just brilliant. Exeter had, 17 attempts with the ball and didn't complete their phases. Right, so actually something happened out of their control, which is so Exeter-like, it's ridiculous. But, you know, once Wasps were ahead, they held that lead brilliantly. And actually, ironically, probably helped by the fact that it was Gopeth pulling the strings in the end and not Cipriani.
Yeah, his tactical kicking was very good. I do think Wasps were... They almost threw it away, partly by bad luck in injuries right across the board.
Mm.
They had numerous injuries. I mean, Willis, who was exceptional, who was heroic.
Apparently his brother's really good.
There's Jack and Tom, isn't there?
Yeah, like his brother is really, really good.
But he was exceptional. And then Ryder comes on.
Ryder,
for a few minutes, looks good, and then gets injured.
Poor guy.
And then replacing him comes Ashley Johnson, who loses his head and nearly takes...
Someone else's head off.
Don Harmon's head off.
Mm.
And as...
Really like the refereeing on that one, by the way, from JP Doyle.
Yeah, I thought it was reasonable.
Some people have had some issues with other decisions, but I thought that particular one was spot on.
I thought he handled that well. And there were people on Twitter, and indeed Delalio and Healy were kind of debating or calling, more debating whether it could be a red card, because it was pretty reckless at best.
Yeah.
But I agree with you, Tim. I thought Doyle handled it very well.
Just a note on the commentating today. I thought Austin Healy's analysis was spot on. Some of the things that he spots is, he is by far and away the best analyst in-game.
I think I would say 50% of the time.
Yeah, sometimes he mails it in. Sometimes he's too busy cracking jokes. But when his head is on, he's awesome.
I do agree with that, but not all the time. Because sometimes I do think he just puts opinions out to almost wind people up as well.
Well, I'll give you an example today. There was an offside given, and he pointed out, well, how can there be an offside? Because there's no work and no more. Yeah. It's like, I would never have spotted that in a million years.
Yeah.
So
Even taking your point, Phil, like I would say that it takes a giant pair to put opinions out there which you know are going to cause a reaction. So how many people are scared to do that? So I really respect that as well.
Everyone in the Rugby Writers Association?
Well, they're willing or they're scared?
Scared. Terrified.
But I think Wasps have showed a lot of dog in the last couple of weeks. And let's not forget, they spent 63 minutes a man down last week away at Harlequins, where most teams go and lose. And they have been without Lovabalavu, Bassett, Gopeth, Thompson, Cooper Woolley, Mullen. They're still without Launchbury, Hughes, Daly. So Wasps, I think, are just coming into form at just the right time. Exeter now, that's three on the bounce.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not going to be happy about this one, because there were so many things they could have prevented. There's so many things that, just silly things like, if the ball is at the back of a ruck, move it. Don't let the opposition come round the ruck and pick it up. I mean, that doesn't take much coaching. That's just a basic decision. So, yeah, it was very I tell you what, although that was disappointing, I thought Hepburn was ace. I thought the hooker, what's his name?
Cowan Dickey
was immense.
And Will Chudley played very well.
Yeah, he did.
But across the board, there was too many errors. Yeah. And half of those errors were unforced. Half of them were forced by an aggressive Wasps defence.
It's interesting. Like Exeter were 10 points clear not so long ago, and we were talking about Saracens being in free fall. Now Saracens are top of the league.
Yeah.
Right, so here's a question. This season is quite probably the most competitive ever.
Or is it the worst? I mean,
exactly. That's the point.
Yeah.
Is it the most competitive because all the teams are especially good, or it's poorer overall?
Yeah, I don't honestly know the answer to that, because I was looking at the table. I was like, there are no outstanding historic teams like there were maybe 2 years ago with Saracens, or before that, when Leicester had their amazing run, and before that,
when
Wasps,
Bath got to the final, and lost to Saracens.
I think the European form hints that it's a lower quality across the board.
Yeah, I think you might be
relatively.
Right. I think you might be right there.
Yeah, I also it does feel like a few teams are kind of in flux and kind of transitioning. Namely, well, Bath, Quins, Leicester, Gloucester. I think are all in flux, and Gloucester.
Oh, Sale. I'd add to that list.
Do you think they're in flux?
They're definitely building for something. I mean, you know, they've got a back row in place. They're going to have to find other players from somewhere. You know, so they're not the finished product. But the difference is they're not going to be disposing of players the way some other teams will be.
Newcastle have continued to build.
Yeah, it's actually Sale and I think Sale are more like Newcastle actually than the other guys that you mentioned.
Yeah, and
but you know, in seasons gone by, would Sale and Newcastle be where they are in the table now? Just potentially top four and definitely with a really good shout at top six.
Well, they're definitely stronger teams, aren't they? I mean, they're stronger than historic Newcastle and Sale teams. Especially Newcastle.
Not Sale.
Do you not think? Well, Sale might have the best back row in the whole competition.
Well, I'm just saying they're not better than... Newcastle have been on an upward trajectory over a bunch of seasons. Sale haven't.
This Newcastle team is the best Newcastle team in the last 10 years, I'd say.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
I would agree with that.
I think this is probably the best Sale team in about five or six years.
I'd probably...
They've got top six twice. About 4 years ago, right?
Yeah, but there's a certain... I mean, in terms of personnel, I think Diamond would rather have these guys than the other guys.
Okay.
I think.
But I think we should jump into that, because there are no two teams more in flux than Leicester and Harlequins in a bad way.
Yes.
And this game...
It was entertaining. I found it entertaining. I wouldn't have liked...
Sloppy as hell.
Schadenfreude, sort of.
Leicester... No, because there was some very good rugby played at time, but yeah, Tim, sloppy. A lot of the good rugby was played on the back of mistakes from the other team,
yeah.
And often the good rugby was punctuated by mistakes from that team. It was entertaining. I would have hated to watch this with either a Harlequins or a Leicester hat on it.
Didn't Austin Healy tweet, "Isn't this hard for ex-Leicester players to watch?" Or any other ex-Leicester players finding this hard to watch?
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me, particularly when Quins went up. At various different points throughout the game.
I did want at one point that bit from Life of Brian, is it? With a, "He's not the Messiah, he's a very naughty boy." When I wanted that to blare out over the speakers when Marcus Smith got a yellow card.
Yeah, clear yellow card as well.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah,
he isn't a naughty boy. He is the Messiah. I mean, that is... I think that should be the Harlequin's banner. He's a very good boy. Particularly by Quinn standards.
Well, this is true. I think the lack of cohesiveness was highlighted most for me when Sione Calamifoni scored a try. Luke Hamilton went to high-five him and Calamifoni just left him hanging. That highlights everything.
Which one of those two boys is going to have to leave to make way for the new lads?
They're just all going to be on rotation. The only thing they need to worry about for next season is getting Brendan O'Connor on the pitch.
Correct. I love that guy. I think he's a great player.
He's the only one that adds a modicum of balance to that back row.
He's the only one with a bit of class, actually.
A bit of athleticism.
Yeah.
A bit of handling. The others are big.
They're blunt instruments, aren't they?
They're just big lumps.
I think both of those boys, weirdly, would do very well at Exeter.
Probably.
They'd probably be brilliant for Exeter.
Probably.
But Leicester aren't that well coached.
Calamifoni goes to Exeter next season and breaks Thomas Waldron's try-scoring record.
Well, that's a really good point. If Thomas Waldron had been in Leicester for the last 2 years, we'd be thinking, oh, Calamifoni, Waldron,
yeah.
Williams. If you put those three into Exeter, you're like, Calamifoni, Waldron, Williams.
Maybe that's why...
Armand, that's it.
Eddie Jones has run the simulation with Don Armand playing for the Leicester pack and it just doesn't work.
No, it's terrible.
The score in the end made Leicester look like comfortable winners. Yeah. They weren't that comfortable. And I think I'm right in saying this. Leicester still haven't got a try bonus point in the Avicii season.
I think they've got one. I saw a very good tweet. Let me just see if I can get it up.
Maybe you're right, there's one.
From Russ Petty. Let me get this up. Here we go. So, since 2000-2001, which were when bonus points were introduced to the Premiership, Leicester have had the most in a season 7 times. And this season they've got 1 in 15 games.
Wow.
That is... And they've not actually got one. So they were top for four consecutive years, 2009 to 2013. They've not had a top try bonus point since then. So they have fallen off. And also,
and yet you could, like you say, they're so close to playoffs. They've been there for the last 13 years. It would not surprise me if they ended up sneaking back in. More because no one has claimed that than Leicester being good.
Yeah.
Because Gloucester have had a wobble now.
Yeah, big wobble.
Well, Gloucester have... They put two great performances together and then lose one.
Hang on, did they lose last week? Who did they beat?
No, they beat Leicester.
Leicester last week.
Oh, yeah.
Lost to Worcester this week. And it was a good win last week.
Well, you know, maybe it's Worcester that are the guys improving rather than Gloucester on the way down. Oh, my word. That Ryan Mills pass is something else.
Yeah, the missed three or whatever it was. Yeah. Missed four.
Amazing. Amazing bit of skill.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. Worcester fans have been absolutely raving about him the last couple of weeks.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's one of the players that I keep highlighting when he's not in the team. They don't do so well. Him and Pennell, because they've got that sort of Worcester through and through about them. I know Ryan Mills came from Gloucester before anyone says anything. But he has been around for a long time. He is important to them. But it's kind of like the Scotland game we spoke about when they played Wales. And I was like, they're 5% off. Well, you know, a lot of these teams are 5% off. 5% here, 5% there makes a big difference. Worcester have had, you know, I've said it pretty much since last season, they've got a powerful set of backs. And you don't get one of the Premiership's top try scorers unless you're doing something right.
Yeah.
So
no, they're looking very good at the moment.
Yeah.
They are. Well, they're safe, and London Irish are... Well, we can call it now, can't we? They're down.
I think so.
Barring a miracle. The ending of promotion and relegation.
When they went 14-0 up against Northampton, it was two very opportunistic tries by Lewington, but very, very well taken. That's why.
So, what would you have said, right? You're Nick Kennedy. What do you guess Nick Kennedy would have said at half time? Going in at half time, 14-0 up.
Get the ball to Lewington.
And also, just whatever we do, keep it calm, keep it simple. Play in the right part of the pitch first 10 minutes of this half.
Yeah.
So
take the sting out of Northampton because they're going to come back at us.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, if you want to upset a London Irish fan, do you know what you do?
Tell them that Lewington's not going to be there next season?
No, that doesn't upset them that much. Did Joe Cocconasinga play?
He did.
Just tell them that Joe Cocconasinga isn't that good. They go mad. They go wild for it. And yeah, again, you know, didn't show up. A lot of hype about this lad. And so far, I've not seen him do anything. Have you?
Very, very little.
Very, very little. I mean, I just can't. The conceding three tries in 8 minutes just after half time.
Devastating.
Blowing a lead you've worked so hard to build up. Mm-hmm. Away from home, you deserve to be relegated.
Yeah,
which is really sad. I didn't want to see it, but it just it's a real shame. But they're sinking without really firing a shot. It looks
they are done.
I've got an interesting thing for you. Of the Premiership's top 10 top point scorers. Okay, who was the top try scorer out of those lot?
Well, out of the okay, so who's got the most
points?
Who's got themselves into the top 10 without being a kicker?
No,
or they're a kicker and a try scorer.
Yeah, so of the top 10 point scorers in the Premiership, of that top 10, who is the top try scorer?
Lewington.
Nope, he's not in the top 10.
Marcus Smith
is number one, but he is not in.
Not in the top tries. Not the most tries.
Marshall.
Close.
Tommy Bell.
Correct. Mm. With all of two tries.
Who has not been playing recently.
No. So basically what that stat says is people that kick don't score many tries.
Because most of them are playing at 10, to be fair. Mm. Apart from Tommy Bell, who's playing.
I suppose Marcus Smith hasn't got more. Yeah. I seem to remember at least three in my mind that he scored.
Probably Dream. European Champions League. Oh, yeah, maybe Dream. Fantasy.
Actually, it must have been a dream because it was the 2019 World Cup.
The final.
The final.
Against New Zealand.
Yeah, so that's where that came from.
He got a hat-trick in the final.
Yeah.
Well, so that sounds like a bit of fan fiction you could write between now and the World Cup.
What is this fan fiction, Timothy?
Ooh.
Right, have you heard of fan fiction
before? No, I have no idea what it is. I mean, I think I know by the name what it might be.
Fan fiction are people that, and it quite often happens with music. So you get like One Direction fans will write fan fiction where Harry Styles and.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Liam Payne from One Direction are secretly lovers.
I already know I'm not going to like this section. Come on.
No. I've not gone for one of those. But
okay.
As it turns out, there is rugby fan fiction. There are some people that really, really love particular rugby players, mostly Owen Farrell and George Ford.
Ah, okay. They have a certain boy band charm about them.
Yes, yeah. So there's this one story. I'm not going to embarrass the people that have written it in case they don't want the exposure, but I mean, they've put it out there on a...
No, that's nonsense, Tim. Who wrote this?
Well, they've gone by the name. What is it? Lone Lost Wolf. They haven't left their real name.
Lone Lost Wolf. Okay.
It's just their writing name. But anyway,
can I just confirm something? It means more to Phil than you, I guess, Tim. But I'm going to confirm it anyway. Lone Lost Wolf. I was in a lift with Sanderson on Friday night.
Pat or Alec?
Alex.
Yeah.
And I asked him, Do you have your wolf necklace on? He's like, how do you know that? And then he pulled out his wolf necklace. He wears his wolf necklace all the time.
Awesome.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. You've got to see this wolf necklace, mate. It's massive. A wolf medallion.
Awesome. This book by Lone Lost Wolf is called Rugby at Heart, and it's George Ford fan fiction.
Oh,
so
no.
Chapter one is called I Just Hit George Ford in the Head.
How many chapters are there and how long is this going to last?
No, it's not going to last. I'm only going to read out a little excerpt of the whole thing. Okay, so basically, it's a female, and she's just going to rugby training with the Bath women's team at the rec.
Oh God!
Okay, and she's just gone out there on the field 15 minutes before training to practice her kicking.
Okay.
Right, she says. With that, I went to my bag and got out my rugby ball. Practice makes perfect. I did a few stretches and walked to the middle of the pitch.
Can I point out an automatic flaw in this story?
Yeah.
Right. Anyone who's played rugby, like I've played rugby for a long time, and I used to practice on my own with a ball. What I'll tell you about practicing on your own with a ball is you can get nothing done. If you've got nothing, if you've got no one to pass to, you can stand in a did in a field for hours on your own and never get any better at rugby because there's no one to train with. You can kick the ball and you can chase after it. That's it.
Yeah. Well,
especially
with
only one ball.
I was now starting to kick through the goalposts. I still had 7 minutes left before anyone arrived. I placed the ball on the stand. This is, again, kicking tea, that'll be.
Yeah, go on.
Took a few steps back, aimed and kicked. The ball went flying easily through the middle of the posts. What I didn't notice was a man about my age walking on the edge of the pitch. I only noticed him when my ball smashed him on the head. Oh my God, are you okay? I shouted to him whilst running towards him to make sure he was all right.
HIA. Protocol.
When I reached him, he was standing there rubbing his head and his face all scrunched up. Here, let me look. I'm so sorry I didn't see you there, I said, peeling his hands off his head so I could see. It's all right. It'll heal sooner or later. I should do a normal accent, shouldn't I?
Heal?
George Ford. It's all right. It'll heal sooner or later. I've had worse injuries, he said, putting his head down so I could have a better look at his head.
What?
There was a bump where my ball had hit him, but it looked like it should go down in a couple of days. I'm so sorry. I never had the best of aim, but the bump should go down in a couple of days. Sorry again, I said.
Who wrote this? Steve Bruce.
Oh, the Steve Bruce book. Have you read the Steve Bruce book?
Oh, with this just horrible, repetitive 5-year-old structure and sentence.
Like if I wrote a book.
He brought his head up, and then I saw who I hit with my ball. The fly half for England and Bath was standing in front of me with a small smile on his face. Our eyes met for a couple of seconds.
Can I just ask a quick question? Would this be as sexy if it was Freddie Burns? Go on, sorry.
I love the fact that she's run over, checked his head, and it's only when he lifts his head up. She says, oh, it's George Ford. Anyway, she's just had a conversation with him. Our eyes met for a couple of seconds, and it was like we were the only ones alive. I looked away from his ocean blue eyes.
Mm.
Now I feel even worse knowing I hit you. I can't believe I hit George Ford in the head with my ball. Don't worry, no real harm done. Like I said, I've had worse injuries, he said with a smile. At that moment, there was just one thought going through my head. I just hit George Ford in the head.
What a lovely bit of prose at the end there.
It really is. It goes on, and it's...
I'm sure it does.
A beautiful romantic tale, if anyone's interested. I'm going to do some mining and digging for who else there are stories around. Would you like... If there was a Tommy Bowe one, would you like to hear that, Phil?
Oh, definitely.
I might.
Yeah, preferably a kind of early 30s, brown-haired, bearded... gentleman that Tommy Bowe takes a fancy to.
Yeah, now we're talking.
I'll have a look. But ladies and gentlemen, rugby fan fiction is a thing. I think that's a sign that the sport has properly arrived.
Oh yes.
Yeah, maybe. Hang on. Wait there. You two carry on talking.
I mean, it's the greatest. But we talked about having a rugby book club with "Smelling of Roses" by Stuart Barnes being the instigator there, but we never followed it through. Maybe this is our excuse to follow.
By the way, Stuart Barnes on Twitter now. Amazing.
Yeah, he seems to be replying to tweets that are a couple of months old that are criticising him. I think I almost want to say, mate, this is Twitter. If you reply to everyone that is acid-tongued about
Well, he's only like 2,000 followers deep, I think. So at the moment, he probably can.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just like, it's not a place to worry about people having a...
Does Stuart Barnes follow you, Tim?
I've not begged him to follow me yet.
Well,
no.
I'm not beyond begging Stuart Barnes. 3,819. Oh, and I'm just... Oh, he's quoted some... Two great Ripperman. Who is this who I'm blocked from looking at? Anyway, carry on.
Oh, I got blocked by Stephen Jones this week.
Oh, did you?
Did you? Finally.
For nothing. I didn't do anything.
We've been blocked. The Egg Chasers account has been blocked.
I've been blocked personally as well, sadly.
Longer than I can remember. I think we only had access to it. The Egg Chaser account was live for about 2 days before we were blocked by Stuart Barnes.
We didn't do anything wrong either. We were just caught up in the conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was it. I was caught in a crossfire. Someone else included me and him in a conversation, and he just blocked it. He doesn't like anybody that has a different opinion. He doesn't like...
I know that feeling.
Sort of doesn't engage in... Yeah, I just think it's the mark of, I don't know.
Of a great man. Of a great man. Of 13-time Rugby Writer Association winner, Stephen Jones.
Yeah.
Great man. Actually, to be fair, one of the very few who doesn't mind upsetting people, which I like. I actually appreciate that.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that as well.
He does what he wants.
There is definitely something to be said for not even bothering to get into Twitter arguments, because it is actually, you only end up at the end of it going, that was such a monumental waste of time.
Yes. I don't think I've ever witnessed a Twitter argument where someone has been convinced of something else.
No.
So it is a futile, entirely futile
exercise. And yet I
continue
to do it, usually with Tim.
Yeah.
Or people about things completely non-rugby. Some of your Twitter arguments.
Must stop it.
Back to, can I just say as well, because I've sort of credited the way JP Doyle dealt with an individual situation in that Wasps Exeter game, the way that Wayne Barnes dealt with the whole game, Leicester Quinns, he is absolute class.
Do you know what? I mean, he is the best, I think, at the moment. Certainly in the Premiership.
I think he's better than Nigel at the moment.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
But I actually, I've got enormous regard for all the refs. I think they're all pretty good, and the amount of time and craft time that they put into their craft. I mean, they all meet on Monday mornings. They all review each other's games. There's not really much that gets past them. You know, they're an impressive bloke, particularly when you compare them to their contemporaries in football or somewhere else. Not just football, but other officials.
Does it feel a little bit like what I like about Wayne Barnes is he's so. Aware, he feels like he has such a kinship with what's going on in the players' heads that he preempts stuff and stops it before it becomes stuff becomes an issue.
I just think he applies the laws well.
But the way he communicates is so assured.
I think I'd do it the other way around. I think it's the communication that lets the players know what he expects. He doesn't change for the players; the players change for him. I think that's the key to it. And if you're consistent and you apply the laws correctly, then that will happen.
I think you do make a good point, though, Tim. There are times where he's almost diffused the situation by he's already doing what the players are about to ask for, where they're either calling for a TMO or they're saying, can you check the knock-on or whatever it is, and he's already one step ahead of them, which diffuses any situation.
Yeah, because mostly when players get annoyed, it's because of inconsistency of decisions, or they've let the decisions allow the players to get at each other, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Or equally, like, there was quite a few people I noticed. Well, some people tweeted us going, oh, isn't it out of order the way that Scout Berger was talking to the referee at times and having a whinge? And my reaction is, it's players are going to get away with whatever they can get away with. And that's whoever you are, whatever team. The point is, Wayne Barnes never seems to let that escalate to a point where it affects you. You think when you're at home, God, they're bleating a bit at the ref. He just, I don't know, he just stamps stuff like that out.
Well, he was very good.
I'll give you a bad refereeing decision this week.
In your beloved Sales game?
Yeah, I didn't think Rob Webber deserved a yellow.
No. That was...
Did you think Liam Williams did?
And yes. Rob Webber didn't? Yeah, I thought... I'm surprised Liam didn't get a red.
What?
Because he storms into a fracas, makes it worse. I mean, I've seen it given.
Yeah. What did Liam Williams do?
He pushed someone over.
Okay. He pushed Mark Jennings. That's a red card.
That's not a red card.
Depends what happens next.
And what happened next? A bit of pushing and shoving.
Yeah, well, he does set the whole. As it happens, I'm happy for a yellow. Let me put that on record. I'm happy about the yellow. I'm not happy. I don't really.
Hold on. Why did Liam Williams run in?
I don't know. You can tell me that because I was in the stands. So you tell me.
Well, let me tell you. It is because Rob Webber had his forearm across the face of. I can't remember which Saracens player it was, but a Saracens player pinning him on the floor with his forearm.
Well, I mean, maybe he wanted the Saracens player to stay still.
So, but Rob Webber didn't need to...
Tell you what, Rob Webber had a hell of a game. Very impressive.
Rob Webber didn't need to pin a player on the floor with a forearm across the face.
Well, we don't know why he was doing it. Could be for his own safety.
Liam Williams didn't need to run in and push Mark Jennings, but the reason Liam Williams did run in...
Hang on, he pushed Mark Jennings because Rob Webber had a forearm on someone's...
Yeah, because Mark Jennings... Well, no, actually, if you actually watch what happened, he just ran in to pull Rob Webber off of his teammate.
And then Jennings gets in the way.
Mark Jennings was in the way, and the second that Mark Jennings had been sort of bumped... And let's be fair, they kicked lumps out of each other for 80 minutes. We're not really worried about a player getting a little push in the back. And as soon as Mark Jennings was out the way, he went down to Rob Webber to pull him off. So, no, not like that, but... Rob Webber doesn't pin him down with a forearm, nothing happens. Liam Williams doesn't run in, it doesn't get escalated. I would say there was no need for any card in that situation.
I'm
crazy that there was cards.
I'm with you, Tim. there is pushing and shoving. They're both in the wrong. You give a penalty for Weber and then reverse it for Liam Williams. There should not be a yellow card in that situation.
Well, I'm glad we're out of this game anyway, because I'm going to say a few things about it. Number one, Liam Williams might have got a yellow card, but he was amazing. Yes. I mean, actually, thinking about it, that whole game is all about Liam Williams.
Does he come back into the starting Wales team?
I don't know if he does. I mean, maybe he does. That'll be for Gatland. Would I?
Sure.
Probably not. I think I'll go with Halfpenny for now.
Would you not bring him in instead of Adams?
No, I wouldn't.
Would you not?
I'd keep it exactly as it is, put him on
what
the bench.
What about, surely North? You got North and Williams are ready, prime to come back in.
Yeah, I mean, one of them's going to make the bench. Probably Williams over North for me. But Williams in this game, I mean, yeah, Moreland Yard had an absolutely horrendous bit of defending, which cost Sale the game, really.
For the Williams try.
Yeah, but do you know what? Even if he doesn't get that, his tackle on Denny Solomona, I mean, Eddie reckons that this guy, Denny, is one of the best finishers in England. All he needs to do is get over that line. Williams absolutely smashes him into touch about 5 yards away. And Solomon is a hell of a finisher.
He is. Surely Liam Williams is going to be starting. He's got two games under his belt.
Yeah, maybe actually. And he's looked class. That's the other thing. He's looked really, really good.
Two games, straight back to his best. He was one of the best players on the Lions tour last year.
Yeah, what am I talking about? Of course he's going to start.
Yeah. Against Josh Adams, who is top try scorer in the Premiership at the moment, but only has two caps.
Yeah. The other thing is, Sale's defence was pretty magnificent. Saracen's defence was pretty magnificent. The thing about Saracen's defence is Sale broke the line maybe, I want to say, 7 or 8 times. I mean, a lot of line breaks, a lot of players beaten. Saracen's actually only completed about 78% of their tackles compared to Sale, who were in the high 90s. And when they got broke, the way that they work back then to get back in that defensive line is amazing. It's simply amazing, and that's why they won.
That is one of the things. Wait, just on that tackling, because it's a point that a few people made after last week's England Wales game when I was critical of Owen Farrell's defence.
Yeah,
it is a way that Saracens defend and Gustard has both teams defending, where you have a couple of bolters out of the line and then people fanning around them. They like, so the bolters will slow the player down and then everyone swarms onto them and shuts them down completely.
The player that flies out, like Farrell, with his on paper 7 missed tackles against Wales. What he did on a number of those occasions was force the ball carrier to run inside rather than outside.
Well, they do call it, don't they?
Yeah,
results-based defence, like what happens at the end of it. It isn't much about tackles. I do struggle to see the logic in letting Sale cut you up. I think that wasn't the plan.
But Saracen's 78-79% tackle completion only conceded 3 points. So in terms of results-based, that is the only result that counts.
And also, like, say, praising Sale for 90-something% tackle completion, I don't buy this. This is where stats can be misleading when you compare the two, because the reason why the tackle completion was so high is because Saracens just went, all right, Sale aren't competing at the breakdown, they're fanning out, filling the field, so we can't go round them, so we're just going to go through the middle of them. And that makes it much easier to tackle. But Saracens dominated Sale. They were bullied at the gain line. Battered. They were battered.
But it was...
No, they weren't.
Sales.
Yeah, they were.
No, they weren't.
Saracens only scored one try.
It was a fairly lucky try. And I mean, it was one defensive mistake. They never looked like scoring. Never.
For Sale to only concede 13 points is actually a bit of a positive.
Yeah, no, it was really impressive, and it's their system is, I think, what you had, two very contrasting styles.
You had two very similar styles, actually.
Defensively, it's two very contrasting styles.
Okay, defensively.
So Sale don't compete at the breakdown, just fan out so you can't be run around, and you have to basically go, come on, you want to take us, you're gonna have to get in behind us first, or you're gonna have to break us down.
Yeah.
And Saracen's obviously identified the way we're going to do that is just by arm wrestling you.
So, do you know what I think Saracens do? I think they break you mentally. And the way they do that is, yes, you can see a big amount of yardage, or so you make a big amount of yardage against them. And then you think, you've got to be on here, you've got quick ball, and then they've sort of regenerated this defensive line. And then they turn into something which looks a little bit like Sale. And then you can't get around them. And then you run out of ideas and you spill the ball forward, or you're too slow in a ruck and they turn you over. It is quite something to watch, to be fair.
Yeah, and like you say, it's a model which England have really cemented in the international game as well.
I tell you what, such a missed opportunity for Sale, because they would have gone fourth. So there you go. And I mentioned that.
I find it interesting you say a missed opportunity. I didn't think Sale were ever looking like they could win that game.
Well, they could have scored in the first second of the game. They had about three scoring opportunities, and they either dropped it or got bundled into touch. So they had more scoring opportunities than Saracens. But big news, by the way. Big news from Sale. Steve Diamond name-checked me in the in the press conference.
No, I turned on, because you were periscoping the press conference.
Yeah.
So I turned it on for about 30 seconds. You sounded excited. You were breathing very heavily.
Well, yeah.
Was it just being in the presence of greatness, your perception of greatness?
I'm pretty sure we'd all agree Mark McCall is one of the best directors of rugby. By the way, that is a guy who should do one more. If he gets a European Cup this year, he should call it a day at Saracens, go home and be the saviour of Ulster.
Oh, God. Let's not go into Ulster.
But, yeah, I was, it was an exhausting game, and also very sensitive microphones.
What context were your name checked?
As JB referred to before in his previous question, which I thought was great, I didn't refer to that actual point, but I'll take it. That's not
so
what I was
not,
getting at.
Not only has he allowed you back, he actually acknowledges your existence.
Well, yeah, someone tapped me on the shoulder and goes, how have you gone from being banned to being name checked?
You're working great. You're working some wonderful things at Sale, JB.
Oh yeah, God! If they ever got relegated like a couple of years ago, what a miserable existence it would be for rugby up in the north.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Well, I mean,
yes.
What was the attendance and atmosphere?
6,000 this time round. So,
do they have the lowest average attendance in the league? I think they do.
Well, I don't know, because I've not looked at the average attendances, but I can tell you this: the Diamond Lane, which is the which is the new bridge over to the AJ Bell, is superb. So we'll soon find out if it is the traffic or it is something else.
Yes, because
it works. Well,
that's good. That will be good to know.
I can tell you attendances, the average. Sale have the lowest by about 2,000.
Is that right?
Lowest average, yeah.
Well, apparently they need 7,000 to break even.
They're averaging 5,500. Their highest
officially.
Officially. Their highest is 7,200.
Wow, so this Spain game for me is going to be a hell of an occasion with 15.
Double the highest Sale game this season.
Yeah. What's the cost of the stadium? 9 or 12?
10, 11, yeah.
12, I think it's 10, 11, 12, yeah.
Hmm.
Are you going to do any predictions now, or are we going to do it later on in the week?
I think we predict seeing as this is the Premiership or the domestic podcast, we predict the domestic games for next week, and then we can have a MWIP.
Oh, midweek. Oh, nice.
Midweek International podcast.
Yep.
Oh, love it.
12,000 capacity at AJ Bell.
That'll be selling out soon. If they carry on playing the way they do, it'll be fine.
I love your optimism, JB. I'm not sure I'm in the same space.
Well, you should come down and watch. It's good.
Well, right, so pick your top four and top six at this point. We've got, what, six games left now? Seven games left.
Seven left.
And the table as it stands has got Saracens, again, I can't believe they're back on top, having lost, well, there were 9 games all in a row, 4 of them in the Premiership in a row, but they're there with 53 points, from Exeter 52, from Wasps 48, Gloucester in 4th with 42 points, then Newcastle Bath on 41, Leicester and Sale on 37, Harlequins on 32. I think that's it for Harlequins. They're cooked now.
Yeah, agreed.
But who is getting in those top four positions? Should we say besides who's getting the fourth spot behind Saracens, Exeter, Wasps?
I'm with you there, Tim. Saracens, Exeter, Wasps are pretty much nailed on now.
But there's 5 points separating five teams that could all get playoffs.
Yes. And there has been a development in the rugby dungeon.
A big development.
The whiteboard has been dusted off and a certain statement has just been written on it.
Yep.
JB, Sale are making the playoffs.
So it's amazing how you don't need to be here to know what's going on.
So predictable.
So just to recap on my whiteboard for this season, hashtag downfall 2018, very much in play, going exactly as I thought it would so far.
Really?
Well, right? I thought you'd lose to Scotland and Ireland. So far, exactly as I expected. 3-0 loss to South Africa in the summer. South Africa just changed their coach, exactly as I expected. Marcus Smith, the greatest player of a generation, will start 10 the Rugby World Cup at some point in the Rugby World Cup. Matt O'Connor to be sacked.
He would be the starting 10.
Oh, fine. He will be the starting 10.
The starting 10.
Starting
10
the Rugby World Cup.
I'm even willing to go he will start a game at 10 in the World Cup. I'll give you a minor victory there if that happens.
No. Because I think there's a chance, like the Uruguay one last time was just an exhibition.
It was a bit of a disgrace, out of Uruguay.
Yeah, it was a disgrace.
So disrespectful.
Yeah.
And meaningless. Yeah. Matt O'Connor to be sacked by the end of the season.
Yeah.
And the new one, the fourth place team for this year, the 17-18 Premiership, will be Sale Sharks.
Interesting. So you actually said that to me. We had a coffee this afternoon and you said you're confident in that happening.
Well, not confident, but I think it could happen.
Hmm.
I mean, they've got...
When are you going to admit you're a Sale fan now? It's okay. No one will judge you for that.
I just know what I see when I watch the game. And when they're at home, they're very, very impressive. They've got a hell of a good back row. They've got players coming back. They've got good systems.
You talk about impressive home performances, one we've not mentioned yet. Newcastle.
Oh, bloody hell, yeah. Have we not mentioned that?
Yeah.
Completely agree.
And Bath were... Todd Blackadder described it as an embarrassment.
There were a couple of players who played well for Bath. Actually, two of the new boys...
Zach Mercer.
Mercer was excellent. And two of the new boys, two more of their mid-season signings...
Oh. Yeah, young James Wilson.
He was okay. He was not bad. I was more thinking of Will Hurrell. And
yes.
Cooper Vuna, who were two of the most
impressive.
Yeah.
When did that happen?
I know, it happened a couple of weeks ago. Two of the most impressive players on the pitch for Bath. So,
wow.
Yeah. More mid-season signings.
Is there a better pair of wingers than Sinoti and Gonova in the Premiership?
Well, Cooper Vuna and Alad Brew. what do I know?
I think they're the best two in the Premiership.
Do you know what? Probably
Woodburn and Noel when both fit.
Woodburn and Noel were very good. The two Worcester...
Denny and Yard. I tell you what, Denny and Byron McGuigan are pretty good.
Yeah, well, they're good.
The two Worcester wingers are pretty good.
Yeah,
Adam.
This is the thing about rugby teams is particularly in the Premiership, the two starting guys when fit are always pretty good. It'd be hard to say which are the worst pair.
Leicester, perhaps?
Leicester. Well, Tom Brady's class.
Thompson
but
and Maloof.
Then who was the other guy?
Johnny May. Johnny May, though.
Oh, yeah.
Johnny May, Tom Brady's pretty ace.
I'm more thinking, like, so they've had Brady, Maloof, Thompson and Jonah Holmes, who are all pretty uninspiring.
Whatever.
Yeah.
who else? George North hasn't been great for... North, he's started to pick it up recently, but actually they've had two pretty... Foden North is... That's pretty...
Yeah, that's not inspiring.
Well,
London Irish have 50% exceptional.
Yeah.
Lewington, who is exceptional going forward, and then Cook and Asiga.
Yeah.
I'm going to call it, right? Not to say they're bad, but just to say that when you have everybody fit and available, Gloucester have the weakest wingers.
Which
is weird, say, talking about Gloucester like that.
Yeah, because they've got... Marshall and Trinder. I know
Sharple. Yeah, well, they're both not wingers
Woodward.
They started at the weekend.
Woodward is a 15. I mean,
Woodward's a beast.
Woodward's a hell of a player.
They've got Sharples, who can't seem to get himself fit.
Yeah.
Ollie Thornley can play a bit.
Purdy, Thornley, Halle Fenua.
They've got a lot of good lads.
It's weird for Gloucester, because Gloucester would always be right up near the top, wouldn't they?
Yeah, but it is a different question, isn't it? Who are the best two and who have the best group? They've got a good group, but have they got the best two? And I think you're probably right, actually.
Yes, exactly.
I think you might be right, Tim.
Now, just going back to this Bath game, every one of the outside backs from 12 onwards is a mid-season signing.
Cooper Vuna, Benny Tapps was mid-season last year.
Yeah, Cooper Vuna, Will Hurrell.
Brew mid-season last year. Yep. Wilson, yeah.
And Paul Grant, was he mid-season?
I think he was mid-season last year again.
What goes on? Oh, actually...
But do you know what? I'm going to make one broader point here. And there's no excuse for Bath not showing up, and Todd Blackadder has called it as it is, an embarrassment. It was a really poor performance. But when you're looking at Pro 14 sides or Super Rugby sides or whatever, Super Rugby it doesn't clash with internationals, but Pro 14 clashing with internationals, I don't like, but the players are at least owned effectively by their union.
Yes.
So that makes sense. Premiership and international games should not clash. And also, this was a fallow week. And in the case of... In fact, Austin Healey did a brilliant article on it in the Telegraph making this point. And I thought, do you know what? He's absolutely on the money. Harlequins and Leicester, this was a season-defining weekend. And a spine of both of their teams are unavailable even on a week off. And by all accounts, England players are being absolutely beasted.
Yeah, I bet they are.
So 80 minutes for their club. Would it really do any more harm than...
Depends if they get injured, I guess.
And you know, Leicester and Harlequins are paying 80% of that guy's wages. And
they are, but this is the 20% that they don't, would be the argument.
Yeah, well, no, exactly. So all I'm saying is there's no easy way to solve it, but I just don't think Premiership and International should clash.
Yeah.
Or the union should own the players.
I mean, I think it's probably a time when we could look to the Pro 14 for inspiration and say... I really like the two different conferences. It's not very European. It's more of an American thing, but I love it.
It is working well. This is
the best ever season of Pro 14.
Yeah.
By a country mile.
Apart from Ulster's performances.
They're in such a mess, Phil.
Ugh.
They are in such a mess. They can't catch a break on injuries.
Yeah, and Johnny McPhillips going down with what looked like quite a bad shoulder injury halfway.
Is he the fly half?
He's the he was the only fit
fly half,
and has only played a handful of games in an Ulster shirt.
Oh my word!
And then you had the necklace wonder, Duncan Weir, stepping up and drop goaling in the 83rd minute.
Yeah,
like, what?
I think Ulstering should be a verb now.
Hang on, Duncan Weir played
really
for Edinburgh
to lose in heartbreaking fashion.
I thought he was at Worcester.
Duncan Weir,
yeah, the fly half,
yeah.
He's at Worcester, isn't he?
Edinburgh.
He's Edinburgh. I think he's leaving Edinburgh next
season.
There's
a picture of him in his Worcester outfit.
Well, he certainly played this weekend.
Oh, bloody hell. Hang on.
83rd minute drop goal. And neither team really deserved to lose, but it's just classic Ulster this season. Everything's going wrong.
No, Ulster did deserve to lose. To score a try, a very good try.
What are you watching, Phil?
After 8 minutes... it's just on in the background.
All right.
Spain-Romania game. To score a try after 8 minutes and what looked like a comfortable try, a great finish by Cooney, who scored all of Ulster's points, and then to just slowly get beaten up by that Edinburgh pack and concede yards, concede territory, concede penalties, concede a couple of good tries to Edinburgh, and to eventually lose it in the 83rd minute is... It's just not good enough. It's just simply not good enough. And I don't know where to start. They need so many new forwards. They basically need...
Can I do a job at Ulster?
Yeah, you couldn't do much worse than some of the guys that are playing. They need like 15 new forwards to have a competitive pack in that league.
Really? I mean,
there's a whole host of players who are just so far off.
Who would you get rid of? Would you get rid of your captain?
So Best hardly ever plays.
Now, are they allowed to get rid of him? I mean, that's the other thing.
Well, it would be an IRFU decision.
But, like, what if they don't want him?
This is kind of what I was getting at, that he's... Rory Best is firstly an IRFU rugby player.
Yes.
Yeah, he's Ireland captain, first and foremost.
So, yeah, my point about the captains I made it for is they're all mostly not very good at winning things at club level, because internationals have taken over to the extent now it doesn't really matter if you're winning for your club. If you're captain, you're captain. Dylan Hartley doesn't do very well for his club. I mean,
well, it doesn't even matter if you've played for your club.
Yeah, not interested. In fact,
Eddie Jones.
In fact, it's probably better if you don't.
Yeah.
You know, the only one who plays regularly is... Oh, Alan Wynn's captain now, isn't he? So he does play a lot, to be fair. But Sam Warburton could not be less interested.
Yeah.
Rory Best could not be less interested. At least Scotland tends to pick lads who don't play in Scotland, so don't have the choice in Barkley and Laidlaw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But other than that, no one cares. And it doesn't matter if you lose, it doesn't matter if you play for your club, you'll always get your international jersey, which is a weird place to be.
Just going back to the Avicii for a second, I just think it's disincentivized. We've talked about it before. The perfect Premiership player is someone who's good enough to play for a national team but doesn't.
It's a fine balancing act.
Like Don Armand.
Well, yeah.
He's the perfect Premiership player because you get him 22 rounds of games.
I mean, arguably, he'd be the perfect international player as well if someone would give him a shot.
Arguably.
I'll tell you who's been a good Premiership player this season. Ooh. Who's played almost every game, almost every round, and is considered too long in the tooth to be playing international. Jamie Roberts is having a fine season.
He made a 50-yard break.
He did. He did. And he has actually been playing very well. And I've been watching him because he's been kind of in and out of my... Fantasy rugby draft team all season, because there's a chronic lack and a chronic shortage of midfielders anyway, but he's actually been pretty good. And his weakest part of his game, certainly at international level, is distribution. He gets enough time and space to actually be okay.
Yeah,
distribution-wise.
The weird thing about Jamie Roberts is he actually fits the mould of whatever his club form is, it doesn't matter for so long. So if you watched him at Racing Metro, you think, who is this joker? You know, what is he actually bringing? And Cardiff never played. Just never played.
Yeah.
You know, and he was always picked. So now I guess he's at Harlequins and he has to play. There's only, you know, there's only going to be one outcome.
Yeah, he's got to play
he
well.
He deserves... you don't deserve it for no reason, but he is... I'm absolutely sure what's going on. He is so damn hungry. Much like James Haskell, who said he would play for a pay cut. He is so damn hungry for a World Cup and also... He's six caps away from 100 caps for Wales.
Ooh, yeah.
I think
he's not going to leave it to chance, is he? He's going to really give it a good crack, and he is, as you say, he's having a really good season when we thought he was done.
Yeah, yeah, he is playing very well. He's the kind of guy that you want. So he's motivated, he's experienced, and he's actually playing some good rugby, and he's available week in, week out.
So it's all motivated. I'm motivated to do our predictions. Oh, Cornerstone. Buy some Cornerstone, and then we'll do our predictions.
Yes, brilliant deal on Cornerstone. Less than a cost of a pint to get yourself the best razor we believe you can get, with a metal, weighty aluminium shaft, which is engraved with your initials, a six cartridge full of precision German engineered razors in a Cornerstone presentation box. Because you get an offer from us, less than a pint, £4, with no obligation to continue, but we think you want to. cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. That's cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, or
egg 10 checkout. Do it
right. Predictions, go.
Pro 14 predictions.
Okay,
starting on Friday night, we have Leinster hosting the Southern Kings, which is going to be an absolute beatdown.
Yeah, bloodbath.
Yes. Dragons host Edinburgh. Edinburgh fresh off the back of that efficient victory over a pathetic Ulster team. And Dragons fresh off getting beaten by JB's beloved Benetton.
That's right.
So Edinburgh might well win that. And then what again would be a brilliant game if all the internationals were playing, Munster host Glasgow.
Munster, right, okay. Munster hosts Glasgow. Glasgow. Glasgow played really well, actually, considering they had all their players missing. So, Glasgow.
They did. Yeah, why not? Give me Glasgow.
Whatever. Munster.
Then on Saturday, we have Scarlets hosting Ulster, which I can't see getting any better for Ulster.
No.
Ospreys host Cheetahs.
Oh, Cheetahs to win that.
Yeah, give me Cheetahs.
Southern Kings gave Ospreys problems. Yeah, so they did. Cheetahs should do it.
And then Benetton host Connacht.
Benetton host Connacht. Oh,
Benetton
unlucky
six
Connacht.
In a row.
Six on the bounce for Benetton.
I tell you what, they're not... Well, they're off, pretty far off playoffs, actually. I think they won seven this year. Bloody impressive, that.
And Zebre won this weekend as well. And they host... Next weekend, they host Cardiff. So, Zebre could be winning two on the bounce.
Now, hang on, just give me...
Zebre.
Exactly. Zebre. Just trying to find...
Whoever they are.
Guinness Pro 14, the tables. So... Zebre or Zebre or whatever they're called now. Anyone four? Benetton won eight. So what? How do you get into the playoffs of the Pro 14? The winners and then what? The next three.
Top three of each side, isn't it?
Is it top three and they have one playoff before the semis?
Is that right? I think it might be right. Yeah.
Something like that. Well, Edinburgh are currently on ten wins. And 46 points, Benetton 38. So they've got some making up. Ulster are right in it though, Phil.
Yeah, but Ulster won the first seven games on the bounce. They were top of the league.
Yeah, that's a problem.
It's not been so good since then.
No. Oh well, never mind, mate. Chin up.
Yeah.
Avicii.
So, there is no Friday night game.
What?
That is
that's because it's the Six Nations Friday night game.
Because it's France hosting Italy in the Six Nations, which we will come on to in our midweek international podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But Saturday, we've got a 2 o'clock kickoff in Exeter, Northampton.
Well, I mean, you'd say Exeter. But at the moment, who knows?
I think this,
the stakes are massive. Exeter are going to win.
I think this could be a big Exeter win by 50 points.
Hope
Exeter
you're
right. To win. Then, which I'm just trying to think which would be.
This is, I know exactly who is going to win your next game.
Which should be game of the week is the real question.
Well, see, it would have been London Irish Worcester, but it's. Yeah. I don't think it is anymore.
No, definitely not that one.
Probably the Gloucester game.
Yes, no, yes.
I'd say
right.
The Bath game.
4-3-3rd. 4-3-3rd.
Yeah, 4-3-3rd. Let's go for that one.
Not the Bath game?
No.
Oh, okay.
Too much of a routine victory.
Four. I don't know which way I'm going on that.
So the second game, 2:30 kickoff. Bath host JB's beloved Sale Sharks.
Here we go. Sale are going to batter them. They're going to absolutely batter them.
Now Bath have been a different animal at home.
They have, but Sale dominated them up front at the AJ Bell. They've lost their better players. Underhill. That day they had Watson. They had, I think, Jonathan Joseph played, and they still came in and stuck. Sale are getting more and more strong and strong every week. Sale will take Bath.
Give me Bath at the Rec.
I actually do think without their internationals, Sale are going to sneak it.
They're not going to sneak it. It's going to be
so much by internationals
and mid-season call-ups
and injuries and players going to Toulon and Rocco being injured. They're ravaged.
Oh yeah, Dave Atwood played, didn't he, this weekend?
Did he? Good for him.
He played, and Chris Ashton scored a first half hat-trick, meaning he's something like 17 tries in 15 games in the top 14 this season.
Good lad.
Phenomenal strike rate.
See, without Charlie Yules now, if I were Bath, I'd be thinking I'd want Dave Atwood in my squad. But
So one of the questions I asked Bath is, can you bring him back? And apparently they can.
In season?
Yeah.
Really? Well, it was a big win for Toulon, so I've not seen any of the game, so I can't comment. But if Atwood played well, maybe they'll want to start bringing him back.
But it was reported in the Bath Chronicle, and which JB mentioned last week, it might have some... The suggestion from the Bath Chronicle, and then which JB also said, is it might have something to do with salary cap. So, anyway.
Well, I actually did phone Bath about this, Tim. A little bit of an update for you.
You did what?
I phoned Bath.
You phoned Bath?
Yeah.
Just
ask them.
Who at Bath?
The receptionist? The media manager.
Head of comms.
Okay.
And no, it isn't salary cap. They were very clear that they would have made the salary cap work anyway. He'll be back for pre-season.
Okay.
So it's completely scurrilous rumor by the Bath Chronicle.
It is. No. They do say in unrelatedly he would not count towards the salary cap because he's not played. But this is not one of the motivations for him going.
If he's fit now, because he's played for Toulon.
But he's not played for Bath.
Yeah. But if he's fit to play for Toulon and he's a quality international player and Bath are struggling, surely Bath would play him if he was there, which would cause concerns on the salary cap.
No, because they would have made it. They had room for him anyway.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, and he will be back for pre-season.
Okay.
So this is exactly the sort of game that I'd want Dave Atwood in a Bath shirt if I were a Bath fan. But
not if you're England, because Sale are ferocious. You don't want them getting injured.
I think Sale are going to sneak it.
Now, Sale might be missing one of their best players from
this weekend.
Josh Strauss, who's been called up to Scotland.
What?
I could not understand why Scotland were calling up Dave Denton and not Josh
tell
Strauss.
You what, he is. I mean, I didn't used to rate him at Glasgow for whatever reason. I didn't see enough of him. When you see him in the flesh, I mean, he's a massive man to start with. He's a giant of a man, actually. And he's been playing so well.
He made a great break.
Oh, didn't he? And he's quick.
Yeah, I was surprised how quick he was.
So I couldn't understand Dave Denton over Josh Strauss. So that feels like order restored a little bit. So two of us are saying Sale, one saying Bath.
The next Saturday game, Harlequins hosting Newcastle.
I don't hold much hope for Harlequins here, do you?
I don't. Well, they're at home where they're normally really good.
And Newcastle
aren't as good on the road.
Yeah.
No Rob Shaw, no chance.
Yeah. They played some very nice stuff in patches against Leicester, but just the patches were too few and far between.
I do like Chisholm at eight, though. I've got to say, I really like him.
Chisholm, he's a quality player.
It feels like they are a managerial sacking away from a good team. Like
Charlie Walker will be back, I think. James Horwell will be back.
Yeah.
Yes. Fantasy rugby.
I could see Quinns winning, but I'm going to go for Newcastle.
I'm with you at Newcastle.
They beat Exeter at Sandy. No, they didn't. They beat Exeter at home.
Give me Harlequins at home. Then on to Sunday, we have London Irish hosting Worcester, which is good. I think this could be a big win for Worcester.
Yeah, agreed.
I'm going to call it Irish. This is so Irish. They're going to win now, and
it's too late.
It's too late.
If they win, let's just have a quick look at the table.
It's miles away from what?
24 to 14 or 15 or 15
yeah,
or 16.
15, 16. It's 27 to 15, 16 it would be.
No. Do you think Worcester will finish above Northampton? Because I do.
On their current trajectory, yes. Yeah, I think they
five wins, six wins. My God, Harlequins have only got six wins. Oh, Sale Sharks have only got seven. it's so congested in the middle.
So yeah,
it is.
I think this will be a big Worcester win to be the final nail in the coffin.
Talk about big wins that could derail a season again. Leicester have got an absolute must-win game, and they're going to go to Saracens and come back down to earth, aren't they?
Now, Leicester, one positive I will throw. So they did eventually get a good win. The other positive is, did you see any of the players' Instagram or Twitter feeds?
I saw one of them.
Which one?
Go on.
Ellis Genge? Or was that an old picture?
So there was, it was Ellis Genge's birthday this week.
Oh, happy birthday, Genji.
And there was a nice picture of him in Ibiza with like a Nebuchadnezzar of champagne.
You love that word. You're the only person I know that uses that word.
I do love the word Nebuchadnezzar.
It's also the name of one of the ships in The Matrix.
It is the ship in the Matrix.
Is it really?
Yeah, it is.
They named the ship in the Matrix after 20 bottles of champagne?
Yes. But it's also, it's like a biblical king as well.
He could do 20 bottles of champagne?
Something like that, yeah.
On a king social. Well, Winston Churchill used to have a pint of champagne every lunchtime.
And Paul Roger, English-owned champagne house, yeah, made him special pint-sized 568 milliliter bottles.
Perfect.
Wow.
Could just go for one of those now.
Yeah, well, you can't get them now because, of course, we're in the EU. Not for much longer, so pint-sized champagne will be back.
Yes!
Small victories, eh?
No, they had, on Saturday night, they had a social, which was Peaky Blinders social.
Oh, so there we go.
There is a great team photo of a 30 or 40 man squad all in Peaky Blinders attire. And on BT Sport, I think was it Ugo and Ben Kay who were commentating on that game? They were cracking up because they cut to it was George McGuigan and Don Barrow.
Yes.
Midway through the second half, and they both had those 2-pint cups, the ones with ones with a handle, and George McGuigan was just finishing a 2-pint cup. Good lads. So hopefully they've done some team bonding, they've righted a few wrongs, they've had a bit of fisticuffs, and they're ready to rumble. But they're still going to get hammered by Saracens.
Yes, they are.
So we are now on to...
Oh, I don't know, mate. I'm just tweeting whilst you're talking.
No.
This is our last Leo Vegas game of the week.
Oh, yeah, I've run out of music, so yeah, Leo Vegas, go bet with them. Right.
LeoVegas.com and get their app.
All that stuff. Who do you think's going to win?
So the game is Gloucester at home, who have been excellent, who have beaten most of the big teams, in fact, at home against Wasps, who
could be without Cipriani, could be without Willis, could be without, will be without Reader, could be without Robson, who played most of the game with a bit of a knock.
Are without Eastmond.
The Eastmond thing looks more and more stupid, doesn't it?
He just completely lost his head.
Just as they're coming back to some sort of form. It looks like Cipriani might be okay, actually. He was hobbling around. It looks like it might be all right. And he came off almost not precaution, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And having Gopeth there as 12 does take a lot of pressure off him anyway.
Yeah.
As in, if his kicking's not 100%, Gopeth just does it all.
Where are they? Where's the game?
It's...
King's home,
yeah.
God, I don't know. I mean, after today's performance, you'd be a fool not to go with Wasps, because they were brilliant. But if Willis isn't available, if Sippers isn't available...
It really tests their squad.
Yeah.
No Launchbury, no Nathan Hughes.
Gloucester.
This is one of the toughest weekends to call results.
Yeah.
Bar Saracens and Exeter at home.
Who plays eight? Guy Thompson.
Yeah.
He did really well today.
He did.
Really well.
He played well. He played very well. All round, he played very well. He put in a big shift in defence. Give me Gloucester at home.
Yeah, I think Gloucester might sneak this one at home.
Yeah, Gloucester.
Yeah.
By how many points?
Four.
Five.
Yeah, I was going to say five as well. I think we're all good grouping on that.
Perfect. They miss Willie Hines big time, and I missed him from my fantasy rugby draft team. So if he could get fit, that'd be good for everyone.
Well, you did miss him, Tim, but you still...
Top scorer in the round, hammered JB, got more than double your points, Jay.
Yeah.
Really?
You were top scorer against bottom scorer, which was JB.
Oh dear.
That's annoying when that happens. I'd rather be top scorer when I just pip someone else.
Yeah, when you need it.
Yeah.
When you need like the final score. Or something.
You've got 70 odd points you could have just left in the bank there, Tim.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm going to need them for some big games in coming up.
You will, yes.
In the race for the playoffs.
Indeed.
Right, I think we're done. That's a marathon podcast.
Yeah, because I'm didn't even talk about internationals.
God.
Oh, my goodness.
Get your money's worth here.
Yes.
Why do you put advertising on your podcast once every hour and 45 minutes? Get a grip. Right.
Right.
That's it. Done.
I'm gonna go back and do it. I've got to tea tomorrow.
What are we going to do, Phil? You're going to go home and do some more work, are you?
I'm going to go home and go to bed. I've got a big week ahead of me.
What am I going to do? I don't know, nothing. Nothing of interest.
You're going to stay down here?
Oh, no, I've got a new podcast to produce, so that's what we're doing.
Ooh, the pilot episode.
Yeah, it is. Pilot episode.
It's at this point in the week when you really miss American football, isn't it?
Do you know what? That is so true. I was in the bath today thinking, oh, I can't wait for later. I'm going to get a pizza and watch nothing. Emptiness. Sadness. I'm going to watch the Sharks game. I've got that on record. So I'm going to watch Sharks versus... Who do they play? Kings.
Sharks versus Lions.
Lions
beat... Oh, yeah. We haven't mentioned Super Rugby, actually.
No, let's do it later.
No.
Yeah, let's do it later. No,
this is bloody hell.
If you're an hour and 46 minutes in, waiting for Super Rugby, sorry.
This is too long.
True.
Right, goodbye.
Right,
bye,
nice
Tim.
One. Speak to you soon.
Bye, Tim.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.